Should we do an intro that we're at Greenville Comic Con or any of that kind of stuff?
Hey, everybody, we're at Greenville Comic Con. This is Sean. I'm also here with Brian.
Adam's here too.
Hey, guys, it's here at the Greenville Comic Con. Brian does still exist.
And I even shaved for the occasion. Have my playoff Fu Manchu. So, Sean is the only two people apparently in the Dollar Bin universe that read Deadpool.
Yes.
How did you come about picking up this title kind of out of the blue?
Okay.
Because you weren't a previous Deadpool reader.
I wasn't.
Correct?
I was actually taking my car to get the oil changed, and I picked up the first part of the Deadpool Thunderbolts crossover and just really enjoyed it. It was a lot of fun. It was just a fun, good read.
Was it just completely at random, or were you really interested in, like, the Dark Reign stuff at that point?
It was completely random. I mean, everybody kept picking it up. Everybody kept talking about it. We were selling out. I was like, you know what? I'll give it a shot. Why not? Let's see what the buzz is about.
Did you go back and read any of the stuff before that, or is that basically your jumping on point?
That was my jumping on point. I still haven't decided if I want to track down the single issues or maybe just pick up the trade, which I probably should just pick up the trade because those first issues are crazy difficult to find.
Probably got some you can have. As somebody who orders comics for the fine comic book shop that you are employed at.
Oh, God. Are we going to talk about ordering Deadpool comics?
Well, let's talk about why in the world are there 957 issues of Deadpool and something every month?
You know, that is a really good question, and I don't know the answer to that. There's Deadpool. There's Deadpool Merc with a Mouth, which is a separate ongoing.
Yes.
There's Deadpool Team-Up, which is a whole nother separate ongoing, and they are going backwards in their numbering.
Yes.
It's springing out of the Deadpool 900, so Team-Up is starting at 899.
Yes.
899, yes. And in December, I think Deadpool is in X-Force and Spider-Man and all these other things.
Confusing. Guest starring in Deadpool and Amazing Spider-Man 611,
yes,
because Joe Kelly is actually writing it.
Yeah. He's also guest starring in an X-Force.
In his own comic, he's joining the X-Men.
Yeah.
So who knows if that means he's going to be in those books.
He could be part of the Nation X stuff. I don't know.
And there was also a miniseries, Deadpool Suicide Kings. Did you read that?
I didn't read that one.
I thought it was fun.
I've just been reading the Daniel Waite Deadpool stuff. A lot of the other stuff that, I don't know, I just really like the way Daniel Waite writes. It's with all the separate conversations and all the, you know, dialogue. It's just really funny.
So you're kind of hooked on that particular book at the moment, not necessarily jumping in with that character.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't read 900. It was a big book, and it scared me away.
900, one of the things I don't like that Marvel continues to do is to release, like, these kind of big $5 books.
Yeah.
And half of the book is a reprint.
Yes.
From another story. That really annoys me.
It annoys me too, as a retailer.
The bad thing about that book is that half of the content was a reprint of a book. Now, granted, that book wasn't like it was Deadpool 11,
yeah,
or something. It was a previously released one shot, I think. But I did have the book,
yeah.
So you're asking me to pay five. I mean, if you're buying Deadpool, aren't you probably interested in Deadpool already? I mean, isn't it,
yeah,
at least maybe 75% of your target audience probably haven't they read it before?
Well, a lot of the Deadpool readers right now are new readers, just because
Ryan
Reynolds
is so hunky.
He's been so, like, kind of a niche character that nobody's really gotten into him. I mean, this Deadpool series is the only one that's really been popular. That's why they're so hot right now and hard to find. It's just because nobody really read them.
I haven't picked up, even as somebody that's a pretty good Deadpool fan, I haven't bought any of the Merc and Mouth stuff because the first issue, half of it was a reprint of something else. And I didn't buy that, so I haven't bought any of it. Have you heard anything about that series?
It's him with his zombie head from Marvel Zombies. And I was just like, okay.
What can you tell me about Deadpool Team-Up? Is that something, not Deadpool Team-Up, the Deadpool Corpse, where they're making fun of the Green Lantern Corpse? Is that something?
They're doing that? I don't know about that.
Really?
Oh, jeez.
I
just took my glasses off, and I'm going to rub my nose.
He's going to have his own little group where they're all wearing the Deadpool outfit, and it's a dog and the severed zombie
the
head
heck?
And a kid with lightsabers for swords, and some chick that looks like Miss Marvel in a Deadpool outfit.
I
don't know if
this.
That's going to be yet another series or if it's going to be like a storyline in all of his various books.
Son of a nutcracker. Seriously, do you want to kill Deadpool, Marvel? Do you? I think you do, because that's just way flooding the market with way too much stuff.
I think you're asking for the character. I think you're asking to burn it out.
You are.
Because the interest might be really hot right now, but what's the interest going to be in...
when the movie comes out and then it's terrible. And nobody cares about him anymore.
Or even that, I mean, Reynolds is doing Green Lantern and, like, two other movies before he would even get to Deadpool.
Yeah.
So are you going to keep this fire burning with 8 books a month for 4 years?
They really should pace themselves.
You think Reynolds is still going to be Deadpool after being Hal Jordan?
I don't think they can make that movie with anybody else.
Yeah.
I think he's the only person that, I don't think, you know, he's... an Oscar award winner in the making or anything.
No.
But he is very suited towards that character. He's kind of like a better looking, hunkier Chevy Chase when Chevy Chase was funny. And that's what you need for that character. And he's also a huge nerd. And he really wants to make that movie. If you throw somebody else in there, number one, they're not going to want to do it. And number two, Fox is going to be like, we don't really care. So I think Hal Jordan could be about 18 other guys. I think the only way Deadpool is going to make a motion picture is if Reynolds is doing it.
I agree with you on that.
And I'd like to say one more time, I think he's pretty hunky.
I'm not a huge Ryan Reynolds fan, but like the 2 seconds he was in Wolverine, I thought it was pretty dead on.
The stuff with the swords and the making funnies in the elevator is probably the best part of the whole movie.
Let me just say, he was awesome in Blade 3.
Yeah, he was. And shirtless for most of it.
Yeah. Brian, do you have a crush?
His earlier stuff, he doesn't have the hunkiness, but...
What? No, keep talking. What? Keep talking. Okay.
But, little role play it.
But yeah, but with Blade 3, like, he definitely got in shape for that role.
I thought he was excellent.
You guys
Two guys, a girl in a pizza place.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You guys are
Nathan
way too
Fillion
into Ryan
was also
Reynolds.
In that show.
Wow.
That show was our early peek into future geek hunkiness stardom.
You guys are scaring me a little bit on this.
What else is under the radar that you dollar bin people don't talk about much anymore? Are you picking up, Sean? Well, something the rest of those guys won't let you talk about because they're all into their little indie books.
Marvel's project? I don't think you guys have talked about that. And it's totally awesome. Do you like Nazis?
Isn't that what you and Danny were talking about that on the forum?
Yeah.
What is Marvel's project is Brubaker and Ebbing, right?
Yeah, they're kind of retelling the origin of the Marvel universe through like espionage and crime and Nazis in World War II, and it's awesome. It's
like, is it supposed to be kind of a prequel to Marvel's?
I don't know.
So it's not tended like that?
I don't think so. It's basically, do you want to see how the U.S. sticks it to Nazis? Do you? I think you do, right? Right. Who doesn't want to see that? Am I right? It's a really, really well done, interesting book. You don't need to know anything about who Angel is or who the original Human Torch is. It's just a good book.
Is it worth Captain America not continuing right now for them to be doing that instead?
Captain America is not continuing because of Captain America Reborn, and they're late on that. My guess would be it's because of Brian Hitch, but they have Butch Geis, who's totally awesome, and he's going to, I think, doing fill-in art if they need him, is probably why he's doing the Captain America who will wield the shield.
What would Steve Rogers do?
So that's Butch Geis is doing that.
As somebody who bitches constantly the last year or so about comic book prices and unnecessary comics unnecessary formatting, and as a retailer whose job to have to sell those things.
Yes.
Is there any reason that with Captain America taking a hiatus, Marvel could not have put this storyline in the Captain America series other than they want to charge $1 extra an issue for it?
Well...
I mean, just your opinion, because obviously you don't work for Marvel.
Yeah.
I mean, how much is that going? Because Captain America did already go up the dollar when they made the switch over.
Did they? I thought it was their rule that only relaunched series went up a box.
They've given up that rule.
It was when they did the switch over from like 50 to 500 or whatever it was. When they switched it over, they raised.
Oh, so if they give it phony numbering, they can also increase the prices?
Yeah, when they switch the numbering from the new numbering to the original numbering, they launch it back up.
Ah.
I really wish that they wouldn't continue to increase prices. It does make it difficult to sell a book, but... I mean, maybe costs for them are going up, and they need... I'm just trying to think of reasons. That glossy paper doesn't grow on trees, you know? Like that? That's good, right?
Sean, when did you go over to the man side?
Because I have to get behind this stuff. You know, I have to sell this stuff. And a lot of it is really good, and a lot of it is totally unnecessary. So, what are you going to do?
Are you... While we're still talking about Marvel, how much of that Dark Reign stuff are you picking up? Do you still see a big interest in it in the shop, or is it kind of fading?
Yeah, there is. Well, since everything is kind of dying down now, the interest is waning a little bit. I know that they've announced their whole Siege stuff. Kind of interested in how that's going to go. I honestly have kind of been dropping some stuff myself.
So Adam's having a negative effect on you in more than one way?
I don't think that's it. No.
As somebody who has to order stuff, does Marvel's promise that after this latest crossover that they're going to quote-unquote return things to a more heroic mindset, is that good news for you?
It's good news. It's great news for me. I just want fun, good stories that don't tie into every single other book. I mean, I don't want to have to read... all this crap, you know. I just want to read a good story. That's all I want. A self-contained good story.
To continue on the subject, what about Blackest Night? Are you still digging that as a Geoff Johns fangirl?
I am. I've really been enjoying it. Even the miniseries. I don't know who any people in the Titans are, but it's still
But you're still picking that up?
It's a good read.
The only cool thing I've seen about that is George Perez did a variant cover for issue 3. That's an homage to an old school Titans cover, but he drew them all as zombies instead. And it looks really sweet. We'll have a preview for that up on the site.
Okay, cool.
Because the book gets released next week, so I'll have the preview on it for next week.
And Blackest Night number 4 comes out, too.
But I think that cover that you're talking about, like on our forum, where the Black Glove posts all the covers, that was one that got posted.
I didn't see that one on there. I have a big honking image of it and the image of the previous one that we'll post next week. I'm a big Titans fan, but I haven't been reading any of that stuff. I've been dropping interest in Blackest Night, too.
Superman was really good. Batman ended, just ended randomly. There was no any sort of closure or anything with that book. Like, number 3 was all like, ooh, they want to eat our heart. The end. You know what else is a really awesome Geoff Johns book?
What's that?
Superman Secret Origin.
I have been hearing a lot of people say that's really good. Are they retelling it and changing stuff, or are they they want things to be different again, or are they just retelling
it? A little, kind of. I mean, the story's been told a million times, and it's all basically the same. But it's Gary Frank art, and how can you go wrong with that?
See, Danny was just saying, how come Gary Frank's not doing regular work? And I was like, he's doing Superman, and the art is amazing in that title.
Yeah. I love Geoff Johns and Gary Frank doing Superman. It's awesome.
How much longer do we have with Blackest Night? Is that...
It's an eight-parter, and they're announcing JSA and Flash and Wonder Woman, so we've got another, 5 months of this stuff.
Something I saw that was really cool... that a lot of comics that have been ended recently, a lot of series, they're doing a one-shot of each of those series the last one.
Yeah. How do I order that?
I was going to ask you.
Like, do I base it off, how many Catwoman readers did we have 3 years ago? I mean, how... It's a cool idea. Don't get me wrong. It's a really interesting idea. I know they're trying to kind of test the waters for, can we bring these characters back? But how do I order this book? What? I have no
where
numbers.
And why and no, when? And
I have no tangible data to look at and extrapolate and kind of figure out what number. is a good number for that? I don't know.
I don't either, because some of those books have been dead a long time.
Yes.
And then some of them pretty recently, you know, but got killed off for you know, pretty good reasons.
So,
I mean, personally, even though I think it's a really good idea, the only one that I'll pick up is Catwoman. And that's because I have every issue of that series, so I'm interested in it. The rest of them, I don't really care about.
I mean, is it... we're either going to sell out on Wednesday, or I'm going to end up with, like, 50 extra copies. It's just one of those things.
Darned if you do, darned if you don't.
Yes.
So, Jay Chris.
Yes, Josh Latta.
Jay Chris from Zigzag.
Yeah, game. Right, yeah, that's me.
Okay.
That's I.
How do you feel about cuddling? Do you like cuddling?
Cuddling, I'm going to have to say that I'm against cuddling.
Are you?
Yeah.
Huh.
How about yourself?
I'm pro. I have it kind of worked out to a system. I lay like this. Oh, this isn't very compelling radio, and I do visual.
Explain with your hand gesture.
But I'm pro.
I mean, you've
sometimes
got one. You've
I'll
got
on the floor. And,
but you've got one of those man pillows, like the fake man pillows, right? That's like a big man.
Yeah.
That's why you like to cuddle.
I do.
I don't really have anything but my wife to cuddle with. And that's,
sometimes I have a sexy dream, if you will.
Yeah.
And then I'll wake up and I'll start cuddling my wife, thinking she's the woman in my sexy dream. And then I'm like, oh, it's my wife.
Oh, shucks.
So date my wife, please. But
we just make fun of our wives for the whole convention. Yeah, that always happens. But we're doing a jam comic. Yeah, here at the Greenville Comic Convention. Mr. Brad McGinty's rocking a page right now.
So
we're watching them with the mic. See, listen to the pencil.
Screech, 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 screech. I mean, I'm going to go ahead and probably dub that.
Put it with the video?
Yeah.
Oh, good. So what other hot topics should we be discussing today? What did you buy?
That actually is a legit question.
What did I buy? Oh, yeah, that is a legit question. We're talking about comics. I actually, earlier, I found a $3 for $1 bin. And I bought some Shogun Warriors comics because Foster plays with my Shogun Warriors. And then Batman Animated, which was awesome, yeah.
I love these.
And then the Mega Fine was the $4 for $1 box where I just totally racked up on some Ren and Stimpy comics. A big stack of those.
I love
the
Ren and Stimpy comics.
And a Spirit.
That'd be fun.
So it was, I haven't seen a $4 for $1 box in couple of years.
Oh, no.
Usually they're $2 boxes.
Where
you're like,
$4 for $1
it's right there on the edge there. Yeah.
They all have kid comics in there?
No, I just got all the,
animated.
Well, I'm sure they had like a Marvel Adventures or something in there, but I couldn't, there was too many people over there.
Yeah.
But that was super cool. What did you buy, Josh?
Like you, there was deals going on, and someone was selling graphic novels $3 for $5. So I bought Ripple by Dave Cooper, which I already own. I bought Grickle by Graham, what's his nuts?
Yes. Yeah. Which you already own.
You own that one, too.
I own that already, too. And then two other books.
Why did you buy those?
Huh?
For Christmas gifts?
I don't know. Because they're so good, I just couldn't stand seeing them in that box.
What is that?
I don't know.
What is the deal with that? If I'm going through back issues, there's like four or five comics that if I see them in the 50-cent or dollar boxes or something, I have to buy them.
Could you remember buying
there's
them
like,
for $5?
There's an Alien Legion issue with Jugger Grimrod on the cover. It's red. He's like holding this knife. And I loved that comic when it came out in the 90s. And every time I see that thing, I have to buy it. It's like,
just like Catcher in the
Rye. You can't not buy it. Yeah, it's totally like
Catcher
that.
Catcher in the Rye. Is that a comic book? Or?
I think that was like the big DC crossover.
Oh, yeah. The one when Doomsday beat Superman.
Right.
Okay.
They called it Catcher in the Rye.
Yeah, that was a good one.
But yeah, is there anything like that you have? Like you just mentioned those two books already have, but you bought them again.
I did that, and I bought a Uncle Scrooge DuckTales book, and I already own three of the six stories in there, but what the hell? It's $5.
It was $5.
But it was recolored. They added more gradients, which I'm a fan of, taking classic comics and making them more colorful.
Right, yeah. putting some digital effects on that. Yeah. I bet there's some Gaussian blurs in there.
Yeah, a couple of those. Yeah. Couple of those. Yeah.
Drop shadows.
Sometimes the beaks go to yellow to orange. All
right, and, nice.
That adds a lot.
Yeah. What did you get, Brad? You look like you're in shock.
No, I didn't know.
Brad that. Looks like he wants
just,
to tell.
I just realized that Adam's filming this.
He's
I'm
filming your face.
Between you guys and you guys are talking.
Hey,
I'm just like, hey.
This is the sound of Brad's beard. This like, is the sound of my beard.
When was the last time you two shaved? That's a...
At least 2 weeks for me.
Mine is, I think it's been 6 months.
Is it a Halloween-related decision?
I was just kidding.
I'm like, wow.
No, that would be me in 6 months.
I think this is like, my hair is pretty slow grow.
I can't grow facial hair.
Mr. Dwayne's got the junk, the wild man thing going on over there for sure.
He has muscle figurines hiding it.
That's how he sneaks his toys
into
his
house. Oh, that's so hilarious. We got to draw that.
He throws away his packaging in the shopping center's trash can because he doesn't want it.
Shove the figures in his beard.
Because I could hide a figure in plain sight. Beth would never notice a new one. But the packaging is the giveaway.
Yeah, the packaging. Like, wait, this looks new. Did you pay money for this?
The frog toy already. My impression. It's terrible.
It sounded like Jimmy Carter.
Jimmy Carter?
Do your...
Let's get Jimmy Carter in his beard.
Should do your impression of Seth Rogen that you've been perfecting.
You've got a Seth Rogen
this
year.
I've been working
killer,
on it. No, I don't.
Killer.
You
want to
hear it?
Yeah, I do want to hear it.
Okay, get ready.
Hey, does anyone here want to be knocked up?
That's not it. That's not it.
That's good.
Nice.
I've been working on a real one. I want to do this bit. This bit like came to me in my dream. I want to have Seth Rogen, and it's stupid. It's terrible.
No,
I'll
no.
just do the bit.
Oh, yeah.
But I'll save it later.
I was surprised that they were using Seth Rogen as a voice actor because his voice
terrible.
Is so horrible.
That's what brought on my impersonation. I can't do it.
He was in that Monsters.
He was in the Monsters. He was in Horton Hears a Who.
Simpsons,
as this little
too.
Mouse guy, and it's like... You picked the most bland voice ever.
Him and Steve Carell. Like, Steve Carell, do you recognize his voice? He could call me on the phone. I wouldn't be like, right. Steve Carell?
I don't know. I thought it was a really bad show. I just don't understand what he brings to it at all. He's not
his
very...
name is the only thing. And I'm scared to
death. I think he's
that
funny.
Green Hornet. What the heck is that going to be?
I don't know.
Was this Michael Gondry?
Yeah.
Gondry?
Yeah.
Really?
Michelle Gondry? Or
yeah,
whatever
Michelle
his name.
Gondry.
The
yeah.
dude who
Doing
directs?
The Green Hornet? Yeah.
Michelle Gondry?
Yeah. He's directing that, and it's written by
Seth Rogen.
And
Evan Goldberg.
And he's going to be in it. Oh, hang on. Let me.
Someone has to give you money. What does money sound like? Put the money up in the mic.
You know,
I get money on the
no
mic.
No offense
sometimes.
To Greenville or. The Greenville Comic Con, but
oh, man.
I haven't sold
this.
Anything. This is, I've sold zero.
Oh, man.
But I bought some interesting graphic novels, 3 for $5.
Yeah, you should let Dwayne talk. Here, Dwayne.
I think that Rob just lets us come to this because he knows we'll buy stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Like, we just... Yeah. We just come in and he knows that we're going to buy something.
This is $800 at this table.
$800, yeah, worth of stuff that has been bought.
So speaking of buying stuff, we've talked about this a lot, but toys. You're a fellow toy collector.
Yes, I am indeed.
How do you sneak toys in your house without arising suspicion?
I can't divulge that because my wife may actually listen to this someday.
Oh, mine won't.
Come talk to me off mic. Come talk to me off mic, Josh.
Because I'm sure there's a lot of married comic book fans at this. Okay, never.
It's tough, man, because, like, if you're out somewhere and you see something, and now, for me, it's turned into I want to have this for my son to have.
Oh, sure.
I think it's cool for him to have.
Oh, it is good.
You know, whereas it used to be, I just dig this and I'm just going
to
buy it.
You'd have been screwed
if
but
when
girl.
It turns out to be a
yeah. I'm so glad he was a. Yeah, she would have been. She would have been up the toy creek without a paddle. Sorry.
Or she had a weird Batman complex.
Josh, I don't keep them meaning to keep rubbing
Justin
you.
That's kind of all right. Justin.
Justin
actually has a toy blog, so he might have a good
I've kind of
insight on that.
It's called Big Black Dildos.
I just have a understanding wife that
actually, her dad collects toys, so she's nice. Kind of been around it all her life, so she understands the collector's mentality, and she just kind of lets me get away with it.
Oh, wow.
As long as I buy her stuff, too.
What does she collect?
Diamonds, clothes. Like, okay.
Precious moment figurines.
Yeah. That's good. So,
macrame.
I would just say macrame. Pay with PayPal, keep the change whenever, I don't know, just and sneak it into with a plain brown wrapper.
There you go.
In your book bag or something, I don't know.
There you go.
Just get it shipped to work. Don't get it shipped to the house.
Oh, very smart. I just make sure I throw out the packaging and the outside trash cans, and that's my...
It's so weird that we have to treat it like illicit material. You know?
Man. Like, you should see how I treat my illicit materials. That's bad.
You probably treat your illicit material like regular material.
She's like... more pot. Well, actually, just realized, like, oh no, I've had this.
What can justify your toy purchases is actually running a toy blog and say, hey, I need to get something new for the next week's entry, you know? So
if I could do that and show that it would make a little bit of money, or I could actually get some stuff for free. See, my wife's problem is the money aspect of what's being spent.
Actually, I put eBay ads on my blog and I've earned like 100-something bucks so far.
No, that's shit. Cool.
Which is not that much.
No, it is. You know how much I've earned in my blog? Yeah.
It's more than you have.
On videos that we've been posting, I'm running ads on it. I think I've made about 72 cents in the last 3 months.
I think I made
You should take that 72 cents over there and buy a comic book.
On the end of every entry, I put buy this toy on eBay or whatever. So if they click that and they end up buying something, I get 50% of what they bought. And if they sign up for eBay through that click, I get $10.
It was a good one.
At one point, you guys were trying to clean up the dollar bin. Did that ever work out? Like, I heard like the language and stuff. Did that ever work out or no? I didn't think it would be kind of hard to do that.
Because comic books, I mean, they just bring out swear words in you.
Like, Sean doesn't really care.
Yeah.
So, like...
Even when you're banging her?
Wamp, wow.
Hey, Mitch.
How's it going?
How was your Greenville Comic Con 2009?
It was really good.
You were here last year. Were you here at the spring show?
Yes, on April 4th.
Spring show? Were you here at the last year's fall show as well?
No, I was, unfortunately.
So this is your second voyage?
Yes, to the...
Along the Greenville Comic Con Superhighway.
Yes, it was.
Everybody, this is Mitch Rogers, creator of the Boger, who you heard on our Gotham City Makeover show. I was trying to think of the name of it. Gotham City Makeover show that we did about the shifting around Batman. What you didn't hear from that, what got cut out of the show, is a conversation that Mitch and I had about his particular creation, because it went way off topic and we were trying to actually get the show done. We were running out of time at Richards. So, Mitch, for the purpose of self-promotion, reiterate what you told us that day, which may never see the light, about your creation, your comic, your website, and the Boger in general.
Well, if I can remember correctly, it is a 5-issue black, white, and red horror miniseries, basically a cat-and-mouse game in between a crime lord and a monster. Nathaniel Sardis, who's the crime lord, is the supreme ruler over this small town that he resides in. Police, judges are all on his payroll, and all of a sudden one day this thing shows up that starts killing off his organization one by one. And there's certain ties to a certain event in his past that I'm not going to give it all away, but there's, you know, certain reasons why this is happening to him.
And the point of this, as you said, is like it's like a horror comic. There's also some crime elements in it as well. From what I understand from the book so far, basically the story that you're painting is of not really having a good guy, because obviously you're not rooting for the crime. It's if this was a horror movie, to use that analogy, which people are going to be most familiar with, normally either the story is slanted toward you cheering for people to get away, or you're some reason cheering for the monster because they're sympathetic in some way. In this particular case, you can't cheer for the people getting away because you want all these criminals to die. And the monster himself is not, as there's not a silver lining necessarily to him, at least not so far in your story. He is a monster. He would be somebody you would root against as well.
Basically, the idea of one type of evil versus a greater type of evil. Kind of like in the old EC Tales from the Crypt comics, how, you know, basically all the people in there were nasty, evil people. You know, and they all got it in the end. The whole point of, you know, the of those stories was how they got it in the end.
Right.
Which you normally cheer for that to happen in the end.
The reason why I really like that is it's really overused concept in comics to have hero against hero fighting, yeah, or competing over usually some sort of misunderstanding or things of that nature.
Saving the day.
And, you know, honestly, that's not going to happen nearly as much as it would happen. Criminal against criminal, evil against evil, fighting over territory, fighting over just because, hey, they are all evil.
Yeah.
You know, I think you would have that much more. So I really like the concept of not having to give somebody a silver lining, just laying
Thank
it out
you,
and letting
it.
Them go.
Yeah, because basically that concept of, you know, the evil versus evil in in stories, period. Good normally triumphs over evil in the end, or there's some kind of, you know, resolution, which, you know, in the real world, it's not. Yeah. It's, you know, more dog eat dog, who survival of the fittest. And normally it's not, you know, who's good or evil. It's what side are you on? What
right.
do you want out of it? Which is one of the big points of the Boger that I really wanted to catch up on.
Is anyone else involved in the comic with you? Do you do all of the art, all of the writing yourself?
Yep. I do have some friends and stuff that I will write a script, give it to them to see what they like, because they like the same things I do. You know, also, if I proofread myself, I don't ever find, you know, loopholes in the story or something like that. So, you know, having somebody else read it is really good to...
It's good to have a sounding board, because when you... If you get stuck into a place where you're basically kind of writing for yourself, and doing it over and over again, you'll miss things that another set of eyes will see. Give us information on a website and contact information again, so people can find your stuff online.
I do have two websites. One is a MySpace page, myspace.com, The Boger, and that has the current convention appearances I'll be at. It has blogs on what's happening with current issues, you know, just basic information. I do have a website called theboger.com. It's B-O-G-R-E. It's basically ogre with a B in front of it for people that don't know how to spell it. And that has a preview of number one and just, you know, some other information. I do have regular contests for the current issues that come out. I have one right now for issue that a fan can actually draw, paint, or sculpt the cover to issue number 4.
Cool.
And the prize is you get the first 4 issues free, signed, and the artwork I'll do for number 3.
Now, how far along in the series are you? It says a 5-issue miniseries, right? How many issues have you completed already?
There's 2 are out now. I'm halfway done with the artwork on number 3. If the feedback on it continues to be good, I'll actually break it off into an actual ongoing series.
Will you pull the Marvel trick of restarting it after that with a new number one to
well,
or will you jump? Will that next issue be a new number one, or will it be issue number 6 of the Boger?
It'll be the actual print number will be number 6, but I'll tell it in mini series format, like the Dark Horse books in the 90s were. You know, where they're more like, and each mini series is like its own story in a long-running series. It's just you don't have to read the first 5 to get the next story I'm going to do, or so forth.
All right.
So each mini-series will start with a new number one through however, and or the various one-shots I will do also have.
To a certain extent, for collections and collector purposes and new reader jumping on purposes, it's not a bad idea to do short-shot mini-series to make it feel like people can just kind of jump in.
Yeah, and each miniseries will have its own subtitle. So that if you look for Boger number 1, the next series, you don't mistake it and get that one.
I just had a thought that I wonder if Adam left this thing on. I'm guessing so. Let me check the headphones.
So well, done, if it's not, you can just call
this,
me back.
He's done this to me before. Oh, no, I mean, I can just press the button.
Huh.
Say something?
Something?
Yeah, it's still. All right, so it's theboger.com.
Yes.
Cool. Appreciate it. Glad we got that information that we did not get last time.
That's fine. I'll be here anytime.
Anytime? I can come tomorrow and talk to you at the Comfort Inn.
Who's calling me? I am in town in Greenville, so yes, you can look me up.
I actually had a question for Josh, but I'm
what
actually
up, gonna, dude? That,
why don't you tell us a little bit about this Avatards thing?
The Avatard thing that started, it started with another podcast named Keith and the Girl.
Sons of bitches.
Yeah, I know those bastards. And I went to a cruise. That was a meetup of these Keith and the Girl weirdos. I met a couple of people, so I ended up drawing them and giving it to them, and people started using it on their really active forum. And after that, more people started asking me for them, and then I kind of let it out that, hey, you could pay me for these and get them done a lot quicker. And once I did a few, just the ball started getting rolling, and I did a whole lot for their forum, the Keith and the Girl forum. Then after that, I started posting on Facebook and things like that, and more people who aren't familiar with Keith and the Girl started getting them too.
Yeah.
So it's just kind of a fluke.
And so you've said that some people aren't completely happy with their.
No, not everyone. I mean, I guess it's one thing to make fun of someone when they paid you, but I never really mean for it to be that way, but I have struck out really hard about 3 times. One, I drew a girl cutting herself with a razor blade, and I insinuated she was a cutter, and she did not like that. She asked me to take it offline, and I don't even have it on my website because it was really bad. There's another guy who was an Iraq soldier, whatever you call it, a guy in the army is what I was looking for, my God. And his name was the Gunner. So I drew him as Elmer Fudd because he had the shaved head, and I heard nothing back from the guy. He didn't like it. And there's a few others, but nothing quite as dramatic as the Elmer Fudd or the cutting.
So basically, what is somebody asking for when they ask you for an avatar?
They're asking for a cartoon of them. Not necessarily just a straight character, but whatever I come up with is what they get. So they are paying for original art. And I guess in a sense they are paying for me to tell them to fuck off.
Are they mostly people you know so far, or is there?
No, not necessarily.
Really?
I drew a lot of people I don't know, and that's always a little harder.
Yes,
if I know you, generally speaking, I can draw you from memory. But you can tell the people I don't know because they're drawings. I don't want to point out any, but they look a little more labored because I was sitting there studying a picture of them while I was drawing.
How do you put the little slant on it if you don't really know them? I guess.
I usually have a concept in mind, and I'll just somehow figure out how to put it on them. Or if I look at them and I'm like, hey, this guy kind of looks like Elmer Fudd, I might draw him as Elmer Fudd. And, you know, you get mixed results. Sometimes people don't like them. My favorites are usually the ones that kind of fall on I don't know. I don't even know how to put it. I can't even think of a euphemism. But my favorites are usually not the person I drew's favorite. Usually, and girls, they like to be drawn hot and or sexy. No matter what, when I've drawn them not, like, looking too slutty, they usually come back with, like, that's all right. But the more skin I show, the more I object. I don't know. I'm all over the place. But if I objectify them in any way, form, or fashion, they generally like that.
Now, the cover that you did.
Yes.
Where'd that come from? Is that an avatar of you doing an avatar of yourself?
Yes. The cover is of me looking at a nude model, but I'm sitting there painting a picture of myself. And it's just, I guess, subconsciously maybe even, I'm saying that. No matter what, if I'm drawing you, I'm really drawing me. I'm just doing whatever I want. This is about me, not you.
My hope is the next cover of the next Dollar Bin anthology will have the Dollar Bin as avatars.
Nice. That's it'll happen. And I know you guys well enough. I don't need a picture. And I know I can draw you looking really goofy.
I am pretty curious about what we're going to get, especially for the cover of our book that I plan to sell.
Clothed or not?
Well, it's a cover. I don't know.
Well, we'll keep it kind of clean.
Thanks a lot, Josh.
Hey, Brad. You want to do a plug for your sketch card site, Brad?
Yes.
Brad with 2 D's. Brad
That's
Parton.
That's correct. Brad did
Gloomy Roomies creator.
Right.
You may remember him from the Gotham City Makeover show that we did at Richards. You were doing something really cool that you gave us a sneak peek of on the Dollar Bin forums.
Yeah.
And now you've completely blown up with it. You have a bunch of them. It's alphabet drawings?
Yeah, that's
right. Can you kind of explain it to us?
Yeah, what it is, the concept is called Alpha Sketch. And basically, each drawing is done using only the letters of the alphabet. Every letter has to be used once and only once. The only thing that varies is the case. Like if a certain character looks better with a uppercase A making whatever part of the drawing, well, I'll use that. If it looks better with a lowercase a, I'll use that. But every drawing is just 26 letters arranged in different fashions.
How did that brainstorm come about to give that a try?
I was actually reading a comic, and I noticed that one of the characters' eyes looked like a lowercase q. And it just stuck out to me as being odd. I mean, it wasn't intentional on the artist's behalf, I'm almost certain, because the rest of the drawing was just, you know, linear. But that thought occurred to me, well, I wonder if I could draw a character using just the letters of the alphabet. And so I sat down and I worked on a Batman and a Superman. And the first character actually was Usagi Yojimbo.
I think it's one of the better ones. I think it's really fantastic.
I appreciate that. That character really lends itself to that treatment. In fact, it was one of his drawings, I believe, that I was reading. I mean, the comic was a Usagi comic when I got the idea. Because if you look at his drawings several times in that issue, at least the eye was a Q. I mean, basically, so that was kind of where I got the idea from, I guess. But I mean, he doesn't draw his drawings in that fashion. It's just that one letter. Made me think that way, I guess. But yeah, it takes a lot of time. The more I do, right now I've up to 43 characters, and with each character it gets a little bit easier. Some of the characters come really quick, like Master Shake was super simple, because if you think about it, he's a super simple drawing to start with. There's not a lot of details. In fact, I had leftover letters that I had to find places to go with him, you know?
You actually had to add detail to him.
Exactly, and he's not a detail-oriented kind of dude, both in look and persona, you know, but
you also did from Aqua Teen Hunger Force. You also did Meatwad,
right?
I imagine that was a difficult one to have to add things to as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, Meatwad, it was difficult because he's so curvy and whatnot. There's only so many letters that have curves in them, you know, and stuff like that. And there's one that I'm working on right now is a Pinhead from the Hellraiser movies, and that's becoming a little bit more of a challenge than I thought it was going to be because, you know, he has all those pins and whatnot, and there's only so many straight letters that you can use to do that. So working on that, but yeah.
And you really have gone...
Did you talk to Brad about Alpha Sketch?
That's exactly what we're talking about.
Dude, those things are awesome.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
That's all I got.
And we've mentioned a couple of the ones that you have, but you're doing, you know, from all over the place. You've got, you know, Cartoon Network characters like... the guys from Aqua Teen Hunger Force.
Yeah, Phil
Kinsevin from Harvey Birdman. Double Entendre. And you've got Adam wants to request the hippo, by the way, from Harvey Birdman.
Is he going to get that card? that card I sent him?
And you've got, like you said, you've got Superman and Batman.
Yeah.
And you've got classic Marvel characters like Captain America and Iron Man. But you've also got, you know, horror characters like you have Jason and Freddy, don't you?
Yeah, I don't have a Jason yet, but I have a Freddy and a Leatherface and the Tall Man from Phantasm and whatnot. I actually did those for a purpose because I went to my first horror con last weekend with that in mind. And, I mean, the normal characters played well, too, like the Star Wars guys and whatnot.
Yeah, the Muppets. Yeah, Wars and the Muppets as well.
But the horror guys played well there, too. So, and I like horror, too, so it's fun to do that. Yeah, I'm trying to just sample, like, one from each kind of genre and just see what people are liking. And I haven't had anybody say they just didn't like any of them. Like, pretty much when everybody looks at them, they at least like the idea or they find it interesting or something like that. It's lots of times people ask me, you know, they see Stewie and they say, do you have Peter? Do you have Brian? Or whoever else on Family Guy. And right now, I don't, but the idea is to eventually, you know, do the cast of whatever show and stuff like that.
And you actually have site just for those now, don't you?
Yeah, I, with the close of the Gloomy Roomy, three-issue series with that, I've still got that site going, but I've started two new ones. One's more like just a hub where, because I do a little bit of fiction writing too. I've recently sold about four short stories to different anthologies and stuff like that. And that site is called Terror Type, like the word terror and type together.com. And the Alpha Sketch site is alpha
and then a dash sketch.com. And on that site, there's a gallery that has all the characters that are so far available. And one of the it also goes through the process of how one is created. It shows a closer up picture of the Vader head and then a blown out kind of blueprint as to what letters where.
Cool. I think that's a really good idea, and hope that you'll collect them in a book format at some point. I think those are I think it's really cool because it's very inventive.
Yeah.
It's not a concept that, you know, that's the standard, but it seems like it'd be a really good drawing technique to make yourself create something that way. I would think it would help to sharpen your skills.
It's true, and it definitely, I've had teachers show interest in it for as far as like deductive reasoning. I'm not really sure what the term is, but like especially younger kids or mentally challenged kids who are wanting them to use their brain as far as, do you see the letter A? And
yeah.
They have to kind of expand their mind as to, well, that's not, you know, just a Courier new A right there. It's just an A, but it's stretched a little bit or it's curved a little bit. And so the teachers see an educational aspect in it, and that's great. I mean, for me, because I am a teacher, I enjoy it, and people seem to get into the activity of looking for the letters. I mean, with sketching, I'm all for sketching and sketch cards and, you know, art for art's sake, but that's mainly just an appreciation. When you look at the drawing, someone's looking at it, and I like this. You like it because of the line work. You like it because of the hatching, the coloring, whatever. But with this type of drawing, they like it, but then at the same time, they're involved in it more because they're looking for each letter. I've had people buy cards, and they go away at the con. They walk the floor 30, 40 minutes. They come back. Had a girl last week come back and demand that there was not an H in Master Shake or something like that. She's a little 8-year-old girl, and she just blatantly told me, "No, sir, there's not an H in this." And I pointed to it, and she just smiled and walked away. So anything that involves kids especially, I mean, adults like it too, but anything that gets a kid thinking and appreciating art and, you know, thinking for themselves, maybe I can do this. I know when I was in elementary school, I remember specifically one time getting a piece of paper from an art teacher that had a symbol already on it. I don't think it was a letter, but it was just like a line, and it said, and her assignment was to draw something around this line, and, you know, just to use your imagination and stuff like that. And anything that inspires kids to me is pretty awesome. So yeah,
awesome. What's the site again?
It's alpha ALPHA and then a dash and then sketch.com.
And make sure to check those out. Besides what we just talked about, they're also just really cool little drawings too.
Well, I appreciate that.
It's like you said, you can look at it and appreciate that that's a really cool Darth Vader head, but at the same time, how it was made up, like you said, it works on two different levels.
Yeah.
Thanks, man.
All right. Thanks a lot, Brian.
Face to face, face, face to face with Brad McGinty.
That's pretty cool. That was cool. That'll be the highlight. I'm going to swallow my gum real quick. I sleep with gum in my mouth. I'll just wake up.
Is it not like
No, it just stays in my mouth. It's a ton of gum.
Are you talking about the camera?
It's like a cigarette. I have to get gum. I'll eat it. I'll get a pack of gum.
Since you brought it up.
I even carry it in this little tin.
Speaking of important things to people.
I chew this Trident kind now because it has that xylitol stuff in it.
What's up with the xylitol?
It's just this thing that they have. It's like Norwegian or something. It's Swedish. The Swedish developed it, and it's like some natural, like, it's actually made of sugar. It's like
check.
I'll talk about it later. But actually, we're in
Swedish,
cavities.
You have Swedish gum?
No.
You should talk to Brad about his gum.
Swedish gum.
It's not Swedish Trident.
Do you know entirely too much about gum?
Ew. I'm a big gum chewer. I chew all the time. I was telling him I chew it in my sleep.
So, all right, Brad McGinty, we are here again at Greenville Comic Con.
Again.
Last time I interviewed you was at Fluke.
Yeah.
And three people got to hear it before we took it down.
And it was horrible. I was so drunk. Me and Jay Chris had a drinking contest, and I was so trash. I don't drink that much liquor ever. I'm a big beer drinker, but not a liquor drinker.
So
I was super embarrassed by that whole thing. Not your fault, of course.
No, of course not. Well, we talked about a bunch of stuff that was legitimate as well.
I don't remember. I really don't.
Well, we started off, I believe we started off.
I beat Jay Chris, by the way, in the drinking contest. Yes. So I should probably mention that.
I think we started out talking about wisteria.
Yeah.
That is how it's pronounced. That's the Wisteria. Yeah, yeah, is that how the word is said?
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know if you want to talk about it still.
I mean, it's
your older work.
Yeah, it's older, and it's I had the sixth issue done. It's just a wordless sort of stream of conscious kind of story thing that I guess I'll collect it in a big book. When I don't know. I haven't it done forever. That's only the sixth issue.
I think the big discussion that we had that got cut was we were actually talking about it collecting into a big book.
Oh, yeah.
But you wanted to do it wordless.
Uh-huh.
And you thought that would be awkward or something. I can't remember exactly what we were talking about.
I don't know. It's
No.
It's just awkward. Sort of weird. It's hard to sell a wordless book, sort of. Yeah. In my opinion, you got to be really, really good to do a wordless book, or that's a look. I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, I kind of feel gypped. I mean, I love wordless stuff, but I feel gypped off sometimes when I buy a wordless book. I think a lot of people do. You know, you're selling not a lot. Comics are such a quick read anyway. I mean, you can blow through a graphic novel in a matter of minutes, but when it has no words, it's like. And people will look at it all the time and, like, no words. And they feel like they're missing out on the value. So I really try to make it interesting, at least, to kind of put something more than just, like... Like, I like Brian Routh's stuff, but a big book of that, I just can... It's just, like, empty calories, like a bag of chips. I don't know. I aspire for a steak-em. Steak-em quality. You might be able to get
I watch that Mandar video in my car all the time.
So that's
awesome.
How you drive an hour and a half.
I should have brought the final version up being a lot tighter. Like I fixed a lot of them.
I just wish all the tracks ran together.
I should have brought some for everyone. I fixed the menus and the special features work better and the music is better and everything,
The special features? Does the music play in that one scene where it wasn't
playing?
Yeah, I
fixed all that. Why did we do it? I had a problem with the compression, so. It's a weird, quiet part with the... What's the first... It's an important part because the first time I teased the awesome Queen-like song, which I really love that song.
Yeah.
I love that. If I just heard that, I was out of the park.
I, like, keep getting it stuck in my head, and it's not exactly what it is in the movie, but it's like, I'm always like, Manda of Suburbia.
Oh, it's so great.
It's like my remix of the, the Mandar, because I never sing it exactly how it is in the movie, but I always sing it like my own way. I was like, I need to write a Mandar song now.
Oh, it's got I got that really cool, like, Queen. I thought about putting together a CD of all the songs. Richard Parsons has done an awesome job, and there's been so many songs for all my cartoons, and I'm so lucky that he has these amazing songs, but he's done, like, so many. He just did a rap song the other day for the new cartoon that's really, really good. He's a really great rapper, too, and he did all the music in, like, 2 hours. So, yeah. It's like an old school. I wanted, like, an old school Fresh Prince kind of song. I don't know if he can talk to the mic still or not, but it's really good.
I noticed in your setup here, you do not have any issues of bread and cake.
Bread and cake's all
bread
sold out.
Bread and cake. I said bread and cake. That kind of mixed it up.
Bread and cake.
Bread and cake is sold out.
I haven't printed it anymore. I'm working on the sequel. I started doing it. It was a hit. I mean, I sold like 30, almost 40 issues of it.
Now, I know in talking to you that did bother you a little that your bread and cake sold so well.
I didn't really bother. It was a surprise. A surprise hit, I guess. Kind of easily the comic I spent the least amount of time on. Not the most terrible comic, but the one I spent the least amount of time on. I liked it fine. It was just like, it was sort of a parody of those. I mean, people are listening. It's sort of a parody of sort of Jeffrey Brownish.
Did he just say if people are listening or for the people that are listening?
What did I say?
Did you say if people are listening or for the people that are listening?
I said for the people who are listening. I hope I did. I haven't screwed up. No, but I think I said, I meant to say, if I didn't, I meant to say for the people who are listening. It's just like a parody of those autobiographical comics or like Jeffrey Brown, all those prints a little bit. And so it was really simple and drawn in a really quick style. I like the jokes and stuff, but people really liked it.
Did you write that with Kate, or did she?
She inked it.
Yeah, inked a couple of your things now, hasn't she? Or is that the only thing?
No, she just inked that because I wanted to have sort of like not to knock Kate in any way, but she didn't. She's not an artist or anything, so she didn't really. She did a great job though. She did a really good job with it. So we talked over a bunch of the jokes and stuff, and it's pretty good.
So you're working on a sequel.
Yeah, I just one afternoon we were out at a bar. I just drew a bunch of pages for it. I say a bunch. I think it's like 4 or 5 pages. Basically, what happens is like, well, in the first issue, Cake dies. So this one is Bread. Not to be confused with me, Brad is dating a croissant, and they're on a date. And then like, there's like a thing, a first date, a second date, and then like I think. Sort of Kate comes from the future, shows up in the future, and she's sort of like I'm probably ruining the joke, but it's kind of a funny joke. Because she went to all this trouble to get there, and she's like, and she kind of like, I'm here back, you know, whatever. And then, of course, he's with his croissant, you know. So, I don't know. Not a very good explanation. Not a hilarious explanation, but.
J. Chris Campbell says you got a lot of stuff you're working on right now.
Oh, yeah, the animated stuff?
A lot of the animated stuff. Now, before we get to that, I guess, let's talk Mandar. You don't have Mandar here either.
No, I don't. I had to quit. I'm waiting for that Greenville Comic Con, the only time I really had him to sell, because we had to do the. I needed to go back and get all the copyright stuff taken care of before send it all out. Well,
yeah.
I mean, no one's really going to steal. I mean, it's in use already, and we have everything's fine. But
yeah.
My bosses want to make sure everything was like totally legit. That process takes a while, so
yeah,
I don't know how long it'll take. But yeah, so I haven't been able to. I promised people I'd send them out, and I was going to send out a bunch, and then he wanted to do that, which is a good thing.
Do you still have the Mandar clips up on the internet?
They're up, but I think the intro's up. I think I made them private just so we got it all taken care of. So, yeah.
And so what other animation stuff are you currently working on? Can you talk about it?
Pilot pitchable stuff. We're starting to get into the pitch phase stuff. So yeah, there's like one about a kid in a coma. I mean, it's really bad to describe it all, but that's kind of like it. I don't want to. It's hard to say enough without giving away. You know, I don't know.
What goes into the process of all that? Do you come up with it yourself? Do you have a group of people that pitch ideas? Or?
It's really small. It's just me and I have an assistant, and I just do. We had a writer for a little bit. We worked on some stuff, but he didn't work out. And then I've been writing it and designing all the characters and doing all the animation by hand and stuff.
So with Mandar, you pretty much did the voices and
I did all the voices for that one. I did everything on that one. I did 13 voices for that one, if you can believe it. So it's tough, but. This time I got other people. I got a lot more people involved this time. I'm more comfortable with the process. The thing about voiceovers and stuff that people want, everyone says they'll do it for you, but it's not. It's fun like the first time, but you always need touch-ups. You need people to come back in. When you don't have like anyone with a lot of money, it can be tough. I'm reluctant to use people. And I was kind of new at directing people for voice acting stuff, but now I'm much better. And so I brought in everyone who wanted to. There's like three other cartoons we've done so far since then.
I've been listening to a lot of commentaries on a lot of the Pixar stuff.
Yeah.
And I guess they do a lot of things where I guess they send people just send it in. They just like read the lines and send it in. And
yeah.
I can't imagine directing something like that. I don't know
how that would work. I don't know how you could just. I mean, I know like King of the Hill does a lot of their stuff over the phone, and The Simpsons does a lot of their actors. Do their stuff over the phone as well. I was going to do some with Jay Chris over the phone for this robot because I needed the quality to have to be really particular for the robot that built like a little envelope for the sound. So
basically you draw up a like I guess you do a rough of it and do the voiceover and then you clean up. From beginning to end, I just usually draw.
It's my process is exactly the same as comics. It's kind of why I got the gig is because of my comics, but yeah, I kind of start out, and I just kind of draw, and I have I have an idea, and I kind of go sort of the SpongeBob route as far as, like, I just go from storyboards first. I don't really script it. I kind of have it. I know what's going on and what's going to happen, but I just do the storyboards first. Then I sort of, like, then I'll write the script based on those scenes, just the dialogue, and then we'll do the audio takes, and I'll take the storyboards. And this is probably really boring. I don't know.
Storyboards. It interests the hell out of me. Okay. I don't care about anybody.
Yeah, I mean, okay. I'm sorry. I'm self-conscious about the bore factor.
If anybody who listens to our show obviously knows that we do the show for ourselves.
just told me people listen to this.
Yeah. And if anybody else listens, it's because they are listening to what we are doing for ourselves. So, I mean, you guys are secondary.
Yeah.
So basically you storyboard it, then you do the audio, and then you do the animation to match up the audio?
Well, I take the audio in, and it's sort of a give and take. It's like comics, it's like words and pictures, and like the animation. I mean, I do the storyboard first to keep it. Has like a visual, you know, you're thinking visually first, and then and the audio can be secondary to the visuals, you know, because you want the visuals to carry a lot.
Yeah.
You don't want to be just dry, you know, and just talking heads all the time. Sometimes that works well, like home movies and stuff like that, but I wanted to make something more visual, so I usually do that. And then I put the audio in, and then I'll make an animatic, is what I'm getting at, kind of, but it's sort of an in-between. It's kind of a process of development myself, because I do the storyboards are all the key scenes, and I actually go back in Flash and I draw all the red line animation, the basic poses, and do more keyframes and make more of an elaborate animatic after the storyboards, because I go with what the audio, what kind of serves the audio best, like as far as posing and what works and what doesn't work. Sometimes lines don't work at all, and I throw them out, you know. So yeah. I don't have a luxury. It's a pilot, so I don't really have a luxury of, like, getting people back in constantly for new sessions to redo stuff. So it's a lot of it happens in that part. And I'll do some pickup lines on, like, a little recorder myself that I'll go back and I'll have someone else do in the second round, but I don't make people do, like, multiple sessions. I don't have that kind of clout or anything.
And so you said basically you got the gig because of just you're an artist. I mean, yeah. Have you done animation? I mean, how is that something that you got into, I guess?
I had done a little bit. Like, I did some inking stuff, like a little bit of inking stuff. That was it. Nothing really special. But how did I get into comics or how did I get into animation? Yeah, I didn't really have, I mean, much more than that. I just had books as a kid, and I used to make little short films with my home video camera and stuff.
Okay, so you did...
I had all the Preston Blair books, and that's how I started. I just made it on my own, and I'm self-taught every way around, so
yeah.
I just jumped in and figured it out.
Recently on your blog, well, not recently,
yeah.
But
well, yeah, I stopped lately, doing it 2 months ago.
Lately on your blog, yeah. You've been doing this whole, I guess, like ode to cartoons that you love.
Yeah.
I can't remember what you called it.
Yeah, it's just, I think this was like, I had like a day off and I just like at work and I was like, I'm just, you know, my assistant was gone. I was stuck between, I needed audio. I didn't have it and the audio guy was out of town. So I just spent a day and I was like, I was trying to be more positive on my blog. I feel like I'm such a negative, I get perceived as sort of a negative guy all the time. So I want to do something positive. I was like, I'll just do illustrations to kind of beef up the portfolio and, you know, draw some modern comic cartoons I like. And it also came from the fact that at that time, Cartoon Network was pushing all these
live action,
like live action and reality shows. They still are pushing. They didn't test well, though. I heard so they've been looking for a lot more cartoons to fill it up.
They never do. I mean, yeah. They put Pee Wee's Playhouse on there. It lasted like a month, if that. I mean,
it's weird.
I think the Tim and Eric show.
Yeah,
I don't know how that's lasted as long as it's had.
That's like one of their big things in Adult Swim.
And
stuff,
I know now really. They're doing the Mighty Boosh. Which is
yeah.
funny, but...
They buy all that stuff, and they just rerun it. It's cheap.
But now The Office is on there? That doesn't make any sense.
The Office? Yeah, I don't know. They're just... I don't know why you... I don't know. I'm with you. I like the Cartoon Network. I think it should stay cartoons. I'm an animation fan all the way, so...
Yeah, I've been...
I don't know. I like all those things, the live-action stuff, but just not wrong place, kind of wrong time thing. I don't...
Yeah.
I feel like when you go to that certain spot, that knit, I don't know, something you're kind of just... It's out of your league. Why are you messing with that? Like, just do what you do and do it really well. Like, all the best stuff works that way. You know what I mean? Like,
I've recently fallen in love with Phineas and Ferb.
Phineas and Ferb? Oh, I can't say. Hey, really? I think it's the ugliest show ever.
Oh, really?
Jay Chris loves it. He tells me it's great. I can't get past the look of it. I think it's the ugliest show ever made.
Oh, my God. I love that show.
Phineas and Ferb? Ugly show.
Yeah.
Ugly.
But it's so clever.
That was the thing. I had never watched it before. But
oh, really?
Rob Venditti is the one who loves it.
Oh, I love
really?
It, man.
Huh.
I had never watched it until recently, so I wasn't the one that said
that. Oh, I thought someone said it was wrong. Good.
What, man.
No, I watched it, and it was pretty funny.
Oh, yeah, I don't even know.
It's like, I think the humor, it's the kind of humor that appeals to both children and adults.
Yeah.
And I think it's really clever.
Over, like, the adult stuff, kids could still get it, but just the cleverness of it. It's really well done.
I'd give it a shot. I just, the look of it. It looks like the ugliest thing.
Really, the animation?
Honestly, like, when I look, I just can't even, I don't know. I'm not picky, I'm not a snob, or I'm not an animation. I'm not any kind of snob, but just that look, I just, ugh. Like, that Fairly Odd Parents, same way, as the ugliest.
See, that
shit.
I haven't watched that.
It's a good show. It's a good show. I don't mind the look, but it just, like, it really wore out on me. Like, I love Dexter's Lab and sort of Powerpuff Girls, and then when it just kind of...
See, I like Dexter's Lab, but I didn't really like the Powerpuff Girls animation.
Uh-huh. I really loved it when it was around. Really? I thought it was just really cool. And
but I'm not
awesome.
An animator or anything.
Yeah. I mean, in my opinion, it doesn't matter anymore than anyone else's.
They just started rerunning Powerpuff Girls on Boomerang.
Yeah. Yeah, I did.
At, like,
I noticed that.
O'clock, and so we, you know, TiVo'd it. And Foster watches those, and he loves
really?
Those.
Oh, they're so cool, man.
You sit him down and say, okay, do you want to watch Powerpuff Girls, or do you want to watch, like, whatever the coolest thing is out that's right now? And he'll pick Powerpuff Girls every time. They're really fun to watch.
All those What a Cartoon cartoons from Cartoon Network were just like, that era was like, when they were on top, and I don't know why they don't want to go back that direction and try to get more hits like that for them.
Well, they I don't know, I guess they want to creep the kids out to death.
That's the direction it's going.
Flapjack, which is awesome and everything, that is a screwed up cartoon, and kids shouldn't be watching that.
And some of the stuff in Chowder. Chowder.
I like Chowder.
Which Chowder's awesome, too, but it's got some stuff in it, too. It's like, why is this in a kid's, you know, show? Yeah. It's just doing creepy, weird, disgusting stuff. It doesn't feel as much.
It's funny. It's
definitely Flapjack is not a kid's
I love all those. Cartoons recently, I don't know about what goes on, but it's like they took like the whole like Ren and Stimpy approach,
yeah,
and then just like ran with it, yeah, for like at a lower, I guess, kind of level, you know?
Yeah, I don't know.
They
I mean,
use
like
a lot of the same gag, kind of.
It's like
gross
there's
out
a
gags.
Lot of booger jokes and, yeah, fart jokes, and
it's like people like. I guess the Tex, what's his name?
Tex Avery.
Yeah, Tex Avery stuff, mm-hmm, like was a lot of gag, like visual gag things, but they work in more disgusting stuff now than they used to did before, you know?
Yeah.
It's the same kind of ideas, but it's like, oh, that's disturbing. Yeah.
Well, when you really think about it, I mean, I think that what pushed that a lot is that the people, you forget that. I grew up watching that, so now, yeah. I mean, you know.
It's funny. I mean, I grew up
now
watching
it's the next
that
level,
stuff, too,
you know?
But now when I look at it, I'm like, really? Yeah. You know, but, like, when I was younger, I was like, I loved it.
Anything like the old Warner Brothers cartoons where Bugs Bunny, Daffy Duck, whoever would exploit someone that was obviously stupider than they were? Like, is there any?
Me and Josh talked about this today, actually. We talked about the Warner Brothers.
I mean...
Mm-mm. Yeah, I love. Yeah, we were discussing that. Now might be the time for that stuff to make a heyday again, like small animated shorts like that. As far as the internet stuff.
My little cousin, I mean, she loves watching Boomerang.
Yeah,
like she's six.
Yeah. Every
she
kid
loves Boomerang. Mm-hmm. And she loves watching the old like Bugs Bunny stuff and all that. Like she loves that stuff. I mean, I don't know why they don't.
Tom and Jerry stuff.
I don't. Kids love Tom and Jerry. Every little kid I know really responds to that. I'm not sure. It seems so violent to me.
It is violent.
It's almost not really a cartoony sort of level of violence. It's just things you'd find on, like, hitting them with a hammer. Like,
right, yeah.
Every kid knows where the hammer is in their house, and they could do that. Right. I almost prefer them blowing up something with a, you know, or just, like, SpongeBob.
They show you all these different ways to, like, really fuck someone up.
Yeah.
Like, with iron boards. It's just right here, iron board, you know?
I know.
Splicing someone in half with a...
Well, that might be why the kids actually kind of...
If I press this into my brother's face, his face will look like this.
Yeah. Well, probably why they respond well, because it's stuff they can relate and see or actually see, and, you know, I don't know.
I think it's because there's no story. It's just they're chasing him around, and it's like, is he going to get him now or not? Oh, he got away. I mean, that's all it is. There's no, you don't have to get involved with any kind of plot at all, you know? So there's a real base level involvement.
It's real loose. It's like the black mother or whatever is trying to keep Tom, you know, from going to sleep or something.
Right.
Don't you go to sleep. You've been up all night. Don't go to sleep.
I love that cowboy one with the cowboy singing along with the record with the little cowgirl one. I love that Tom and Jerry. I'll laugh at all day long.
I love Tom and Jerry where he's singing and it's singing, is you ain't my baby.
Yeah.
I love that.
Those are great.
One of the weirdest things I saw recently with watching them is it was the soundtrack in the back of one was Wizard of Oz music. Over the Rainbow and Follow the Yellow Beak. They were playing like
MGM. So yeah,
I mean, yeah.
And
was
that's
like piano.
Tom and Jerry?
Yeah, it was the Tom and Jerry.
And like, that's like something like anytime you listen to any of those old cartoons, it's all like symphonic music. It's all like orchestra music, and it's like these are classics. These are like Baroque period and classical periods music that kids are like listening to and associating with, and you don't get that at all anymore.
My first cartoons, I was taking that approach. I'm like, I'll do this, but you cannot. Without an orchestra, there's no... It was a nightmare. It's terrible. I mean, you think, like, oh, this is gonna look great on the screen, you know, without any music, that stuff. Like, watching someone run like that and running around is just so... It's, like, this quiet. It's just, like, dead air. You're just like, oh, my gosh. You have to have, like, really good punchy music for it to work, but it doesn't work unless it responds. So you have to have, like, whoop, and, like, meow. Like, every little nuance has to be there or it just falls so flat. Like, I was so mortified with that dub form cartoon. I remember just watching it, like, oh, God.
The old silent cartoons are kind of creepy to me.
Yeah.
Because they don't have any effects.
Yeah.
And they're kind of blurry and
I love the ones
something
just like
is menacing.
Like someone recorded it with a mic underwater and it's like that's the name. That's the
something very creepy about that. Yeah, that I really did.
Flashes really weird. Yeah.
When you're writing stuff, Brad, do you have like a target audience or anything? Do you think about stuff like that?
Not at all.
Target audience.
Well, just like the title of it, like when we do our show.
We feel like you are the target audience.
Oh, I mean, yeah. Mm-hmm. We're shooting for like adult-oriented cartoons, so yeah. I mean, I think most people. It is weird to think who watches more cartoons now and what really the audience is, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know.
Have you considered doing, like, any
pitch
younger,
stuff?
Yeah, like,
yeah, I just imagine
stuff.
The pitch processing and all the network. I would just be over my head.
Like, you think that would be harder to do to write a
lower audience?
Well,
yeah, I think about it, and it's sort of like, it seems like it would not be age-appropriate when I show it to other people who have kids. I'm like, oh, I didn't think about that. Like, I just wanted to do this kid with these bears, and I was like, oh, yeah, it would be like the bears upstairs. I had this idea, and I was like... And my sister was like, oh, you couldn't show a kid that. There's all these weird rules you can't do, you don't think about. Like, kids can't keep secrets anymore. They can't keep, like, you can't have, like, sort of, like, you know, the kid, they don't want kids keeping secrets from adults because that gives them a bad idea. So you can't have, like, the secret animals that you know about in your own secret world. Like, all these little people live under my bed and stuff like that.
Yeah. Dexter's Lab was secret and, oh, no, that's not secret.
Yeah.
Like, Johnny Tests, he has... The twin sisters who have a lab, but the dad knows that they have a lab.
Yeah, it's one of the big rules now that never occurred to me, and all my ideas are like around that. Like, oh, well, this little girl lives in this apartment, and the bears are upstairs, and they go upstairs, and no, you can't have a kid like go upstairs to someone else's apartment. Like, can you imagine like how many kids would get murdered if that made it on the air? Probably like kids would just get killed right and left. I get like letters from creepy old men like, thanks, bro, thanks for helping me out. I'm like, what?
They just keep knocking at my door, Brad. I appreciate it.
I just threw.
Dear Brad, thank you so much.
Yeah.
Anonymous.
That
bear upstairs.
Yeah. All the candy, the money I save on candy, I can now use on nails to shove to their little kitty eyelids. I'm like, oh my God, what did I do? What happened? I sold my ice cream truck, and now I'm a more efficient killer. I'm like, oh, damn it.
No, I just rent up top floors in all the apartment buildings in town.
Yeah.
Friendly bear on the door.
I tell them.
I never have to keep up appearances.
I can look as creepy as I feel. P.S. Enclosed is a bushel of my pubic hair. I'm like, oh my God. A bushel. Yeah, and a cinnamon broom.
There's no coming back from there.
Yeah. Yeah, push the pews in a cinnamon
now
room.
I can now dress as creepy as I feel.
Never have to leave the house.
Hey, Rob.
Hi, Brian.
You're the proprietor of this here Greenville Comic Con. How was your Greenville Comic Con 2009?
It's the best attended show we've had in years. It was over 350. That's more than we even had when we had Dave Cockrum for his last show. I couldn't be happier.
Besides just the attendance, you had a very full room all day today. You had lots of tables filled with local creators, as well as a lot of local dealers, and lots of people walking around all day.
Well, it's probably the largest guest list I think we've ever had. Probably close to 20 guys. For a one-day show our size, that's a lot of people. I think that attributed to the attendance. I think you've got people coming out to see some different guys, people they've never seen, or coming to see their friends. Dealer-wise, we had new dealers. The dealer's room's completely sold out. We had to turn people away. We're looking for a bigger room for our next show. And I think the economy's better, so people hung out. They hung out for the guests and maybe spent more money with the dealers. All of them seem really happy.
Yeah, and it looks like the dealers kind of came equipped to have deals. Lots of half-off books, lots of boxes with $1 a comic, $5 a trade,
sure,
things
but,
of that nature.
I still saw guys selling stuff off their backboards, too. Yeah. I know one dealer did really well off his backboard, and that's the high-dollar stuff, but we had one guy do well. And I saw a lot of guys carrying sketches and T-shirts. T-shirts sold really well for Planet Comics. I know that. They did really well with a lot of T-shirt sales.
Do you have your dates set up for your spring show yet?
We don't. We wait for all the big shows to settle in with their dates. Usually it's somewhere in April or May. Try to get it before Heroes Con. And just make sure we don't hit somebody big so it eats up all the dealers and guests so we don't have anybody really to come set up. So we hopefully know something maybe 60 days or so.
Cool. And Heroes, all of that stuff is starting to be announced now. The New York Cons for next year were announced last week. Heroes Con will be announcing their date for next summer, this coming Friday.
Yeah, I think it's about a week away.
And you can check GreenvilleComicCon.com.
Yeah, GreenvilleComicCon.com. It'll take you to our MySpace. You can, if you want information, email me at info@GreenvilleComicCon.com.
And you can find those links also on our site.
That's so you can go to our website, the Dollar Bin.
Yeah, pretty awesome.
That's pretty awesome. We like it.
It's
almost as happy as, 24 Wings. And, look, it's Adam Mann, your resident Dollar Bin audio editor, who probably won't actually edit anything involved in this.
How was Greenville Comic Con for you, Brian?
Delicious.
Awesome.
I thought it had a little too much salt. Hey, guys, thanks for coming out. And we had a great time.
Thanks for having us, as always.
We enjoy all the support.
And you're even accepting members of our entourage now.
Just the fact that you have an entourage makes me a little nervous.
It should.
Both people listening to this, send an email and ask for the Flying Iron Bar to return. We beg of you.
And all three people that read my SmackDown recaps.
Yes. Yes, Flying Iron Bar, beg for it. Thank you, and good night.
Thanks, man.
Thanks for letting me talk about Deadpool. Every time I try to bring it up, they're like,
"Yeah, I think Terrence reads
that." See, they always tell me to shut up too, but I'm so much bigger than all the rest of them.
Yeah.